basically, we had between 40 and 60 inpatients overnight. So the vast majority of people serviced by the hospital were outpatient. 4% approximately of the people that come to the emergency room actually have to go in for inpatient. So we really don't have an emergency room. It's a primary care clinic.
So what you're saying is that folks who are taking advantage of healthcare services at Cooper Green presently really are going there in place of a primary care physician that they might go to for a sinus infection or an earache or something like that. They go to the emergency room because they don't have insurance.
And they can't be refused by an emergency room.
Right.
In the hospital, let's talk the inpatient portion. We have to staff that 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. That's a huge fixed cost. We've been blessed by many great hospitals just down here on 8th Avenue from St. Vincent's University, Cooper Green. You know, we've got Princeton, we've got Brookwood. They're not full. And they've got to staff their hospitals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as well. Why don't we allow the other hospitals who are already fully staffed accept these patients, many of whom have Blue Cross or Medicare or Medicaid, they're paying patients. Let's let the other hospitals deal with inpatient, do what they do best. And then let's let us use the money that we save to expand access and locations for primary care as well as specialty out clinics.
So essentially, someone who is in bad enough health that they need to be admitted to the hospital will be sent to another hospital. And that bulk of patients who've been going to Cooper Green who really only need primary care, they don't need inpatient, it's not true emergency, they will go to Cooper Green for that primary care kind of services. Now, help me understand this, because under the law, you cannot deny someone for emergency services if they cannot show proof of insurance. But you can deny them for primary care services if they don't have insurance.
I really don't know that law, but our objective is to provide that and expand access. I mean, I've always talked about expanded access. We're going to save enough money from not having to staff an inpatient hospital for 40 patients a night. That gap in dollars will give us the ability to probably open multiple clinics out in the community. When you look at the cluster graph of a lot of our patients, they live in Bessemer. We've got an empty mall there. What would be a better use for that mall than to put a primary care clinic in that mall? It would probably help revitalize that area. So we've revitalized downtown. Why don't we attempt to revitalize Westlake Mall?
Would you be concerned at all, though, that if you set that up as a primary care facility, basically a doctor's office, let's use the term that we all use.
Well, some of them can give a lot more service than a doctor's office.
Okay.
It's probably a doctor's office on steroids, and probably that's a bad analogy, but it's more than just a doctor's office.
Okay, so enhanced doctor's office. Enhanced doctor's office. That will treat people that don't have insurance. It's basically a free clinic. And if you start moving it into communities and make it much easier for folks to take access of that service, you might eat through those extra revenues that you have from closing the inpatient facility at Cooper Green pretty quickly, one might imagine.
We'll have to look. You know, obviously, it's hard to forecast. But I do know this, that we're going to allocate some money for inpatient care. We're going to, in essence, be an insurance company for Cooper Green clinics and the other hospitals.
The debate over Cooper Green has turned into sort of a full-blown civil rights protest, some people would say, with African-American residents feeling very put upon by a majority white commission that they say didn't ask for their input. Do you regret the way that your commission has handled the Cooper Green situation?
No, there's been substantive conversations. I actually went to a town hall meeting at Pratt City and discussed the problems at the hospital. I was treated very respectfully. I think the media has misplayed how many people have actually protested. I mean, last week, Representative Rogers and Moore held a press conference that there were 14 people in attendance. There are a lot of minorities that have discussed with me, blacks and Hispanics, that they understand that the current model is broken. The current medical community, while they won't say it publicly, understands the current model is broken. And so there's been adequate discussion and debate. And, you know, what I think people aren't used to is a commission that finally is decisive, and we're doing what needs to be done. I mean, we haven't been in office for 2 years, And, you know, we've hired a county manager. We shifted the whole form of government. Now we've resolved the AMBAC lease. We've entered into Chapter 9 because we were given no other alternative. We downsized the general fund from $319 million to $205 million. You know, while we disagree on certain subjects, I mean, if you'll really track the voting record of this commission, the next vote could be unanimous or it could be a different minority. So we're actually doing the representative form of government.
Obviously, that's a long list of things that have definitely been accomplished in the last 2 years. You've had a lot on your plate. But are you denying the fact that race doesn't play a role in this Cooper Green debate?
I'm denying the fact that race had anything to do with my decision. I'm 64 years old. I've never in my life been accused of being a racist until the last couple of weeks. Never. Stand on my record. Stand on my friends. The closest personal friend I have on the Jefferson County Commission is Commissioner Sandra Little Brown. We don't agree on everything, but we've treated each other with utmost respect. We've had some good conversations behind closed doors, but we've never left mad. My decision was based upon, I think, the current model is broken. The current model is unsustainable. We can take the same dollars and expand access points and quality of service to the indigents. Those indigents, whether they be black, white, or Hispanic. So my decision wasn't based on any racial motivations. Obviously, there have been some people that have tried to make it that way. And, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones.
It seems like, with some issues, certainly in Birmingham, race still comes up. And I wonder what your thoughts are and how that gets in the way of governing.
It definitely gets in the way of governing. Today, I had a conversation at the BBA board meeting with Tim Lewis on this very issue that, you know, there needs to be a group. Maybe it starts with his five people that are willing to sit down and put these issues on the table and let's discuss them out so that race
doesn't
become...
What issues are you talking about? You're talking about the substantive issues or the race issue, which seems to underlie a
lot.
Both.
I mean, you know, the first thing you've got to determine or the citizens have to determine is the grass is brown on both sides of the fence. Neither side is 100% wrong. Neither side is 100% right. We've got a polarized legislature. It's 9-9, and the county is dying on the vine because we can't reach consensus among the commission and the legislators. And so until we put aside the pettiness and we really have substantive conversations, we're not going to move this community forward.
Well, David Carrington, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.